listen to Lisa on your smart speaker. Enable our Alexa skill and never miss a moment of the Lisa Wexler Show. Only on WICC 600.
And welcome back. A few days ago, former city police chief of New Haven, Anthony Campbell, our next guest, was at a press conference, and he was talking about the terrible, untimely, horrible loss of his baby brother. And he said that he wanted to shout it from the rooftops because he wanted to share his anguish about the terrible gun violence that affects so many families every single day in this country. He has since become, after being the chief of police of New Haven, he is now the assistant chief of police at Yale University, also in New Haven. And officer and assistant police chief Anthony Campbell joins us right now. Chief, thank you so much for coming on the show today. Thank you, Officer Campbell.
Oh, Lisa, thank you for having me. And I really thank you for your condolences and acknowledgement of the tragedy that I and my family are experiencing. And to be quite honest, that far too many families in this state and throughout our country are experiencing on a daily basis.
We are having, as it happens, because it was not planned to be the same show, but as it happens at 11:30, we're having the two architects of the Sandy Hook Memorial join us. So I think it's fitting because it's a conversation that never ends. It's a circle that never closes.
I agree. You know, Sandy Hook, when it happened, happened on my son's birthday, and I'll never forget my wife and I being in a restaurant with my then 9-year-old and seeing it on the television screen. And my wife is sitting at the table weeping as we're trying to celebrate with my son. And here we are. Years later, 8 years later, and, you know, I get the call after, you know, leaving the New Haven Police Department where I was just jubilant because I was celebrating the retirement of my predecessor, Otonio Reyes, retiring as chief, and I get the call from my cousin saying that my 32-year-old baby brother has been killed in gun violence in New York City. This cycle, you know, long before Sandy Hook, because at the press conference, I also spoke about the fact that I lost my cousin Kevin, who was 23 years old, in 1991 while I was an undergraduate student at Yale. And then 2 years later, my uncle, Stanley. And the reality is that when I was the chief in New Haven, I went to every homicide victim's funeral. And the vast majority of those homicide victims were people who had been shot and killed in the city of New Haven. And many of them looked exactly like me. This gun violence, you know, as you said before, is an unending circle. And we have to do something about it. I'm glad to hear that 11:30 you're having, you know, Sandy Hook being spoken about. Because if we don't do something about this, and rather than just talk about it, do something, you're going to have more shows like this and more memorials, and it's going to affect more and more people. And I don't want anyone to have the heart that I'm feeling right now and the heart that my family is feeling right now. It's unnecessary.
Can I ask you, Chief Anthony Campbell, can I ask you what happened to your brother? What happened to your brother?
Absolutely. Devin was engaged in some business activities with a gentleman in New York. He had decided that he didn't want to go in the same direction as this gentleman. And the gentleman got into an argument with him. They got into an actual fist fight. And my brother was a big guy. He was built more like my dad and just a powerhouse of a guy. His actual nickname around the neighborhood was Fat Boy. And he basically, you know, beat the guy up. You know, and the guy said to him at the end of the fight, you know, you better watch your back because I'm going to get a gun and get you. My brother didn't think anything of it because he knew this guy. It was a simple dispute between them. They both had, you know, thrown punches at one another, and that was the end of it. Well, the gentleman unfortunately sat across the street from where my uncle lived, knowing that Devin periodically came to visit my uncle. And sure enough, when Devin pulled up to go visit my uncle, he opened his car door. The gentleman got out of his vehicle. Devin didn't see him. And the gentleman opened fire on him. firing 10 times at him, striking my brother 5 times. Fortunately, this was all captured on video. So I've been in contact with the New York detectives, and it's just a heartbreaking situation, a situation which you change the names, you change the years, has played out time and time again. People getting into disputes and settling those disputes with a firearm, which is far too easy to obtain in this country.
Oh, my God. I can't even. Wow. And is there any, if I could ask, were the business dealings perfectly above board and legal, or was anything illicit about them?
Oh,
yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Just wondering if the guy was a known criminal or anything like that. Okay. So he wasn't.
No,
so the guy wasn't a known criminal, but he easily got hold of a gun, and he
Absolutely. And the thing about it is, you know, that Devin's story, unfortunately, being shot on the streets of Harlem. Many people, when I went to his funeral last Friday, you know, I talked to many of his friends and colleagues and our family members, all we could do was shake our head and say, this story is just too familiar. So many people, whether it's New York, right now, New Haven, Hartford, Bridgeport, Chicago, and it's black and brown people in particular who are being killed. And the sad thing is that in most instances, it's black and brown people killing one another. And it's heartbreaking because it's part of the larger cycle of systemic racism that has plagued our country. And black and brown people struggle in this country and always have. And they engage in a lot of activities that lead to violence and obtaining weapons and using those weapons against one another. And not only would I attend the funerals of homicide victims in the city of New Haven, I would do it to send a message to support the family, but also to send a message to the community that these young men and women who passed away as a result of gun violence, their lives matter. And we made it a point in the city of New Haven to try and close these cases, to make arrests in these cases, to get convictions in these cases. Because if you look across the board, if any of your readers ever have a chance, they should read a book by Jill Leovi called Ghetto Side. The point of that book is that in this country in particular, black and brown people die at a disproportionate rate due to gun violence and due to gun violence against one another, and yet there is very little closure, very little arrest, very little follow-up and prosecution of those who killed a black individual, a brown individual. And I think that sends a message to the larger black and brown community that we don't matter. And so my thing is, I'm a proponent of the Second Amendment, but I am also a proponent of common sense. As a person of faith, I think about a verse in the Bible where Jesus is being criticized for healing someone on the Sabbath. And he says to the religious people who are trapped in the law, tell me this, was the Sabbath created for man or was man created for the Sabbath? Mm-hmm. And I think the same is true for us today in these United States when it comes to the Constitution. You have to ask yourself, was the Constitution created to serve us as human beings in this country, as citizens? Or are we created to be servants of the Constitution? We need common sense gun reform. We need to make sure that all of our law enforcement agencies have leaders who understand that when a black and brown person is killed, no matter who they're killed by, if it's gun violence, that they need to be there, they need to be at those funerals, they need to do whatever it takes to make arrests, and they need to do whatever it takes to help create legislation and reform so that guns cannot get into the hands of people who would use them so wantonly and violently against others.
So we're chatting with the former New Haven police chief, but now assistant police chief at Yale, Anthony Campbell. I'm interested, Officer Campbell, I want to hear more about, do you think that the racism that was perpetrated for generations upon black and brown people, tell me about that line between that racism and the line
Absolutely.
that connects to the violence among people in the black and brown community?
America, being formed as a country, which has always been rather violent, we have a violent origin.
Oh, yes.
But
oh, yes.
A foundation of systemic racism where chattel slavery all the way up through the Emancipation Proclamation. Now, Abraham Lincoln did a wonderful thing in freeing people, but you know, one of the things that didn't follow behind it was legislation which not only freed African Americans, but it should have provided us with the same rights and opportunities as other Americans. We did not have the ability to vote and to have a say at the table. We did not, for the longest period of time, have an opportunity to freely travel in this country, to obtain jobs, and of course, to obtain a decent education. Now, when you combine all of those things over a period of time, you wind up where we are today, where the disparity between black and white from an income standpoint is huge. We couldn't own land. We couldn't have resources. And so we wind up in a position where most black and brown people in this country struggle to get a good education, which is the core of getting a good job, struggle to make ends meet. And so we wind up in a position where many black and brown people say, I got to do what I got to do. I got to find a way to feed my family. I got to find a way to make ends meet and provide a good life and an education for my children. And we wind up in the streets.
You know what it reminds me of? You're going to laugh when I tell you this, but when I'm listening to you, we're chatting with Anthony Campbell, I'm reminded of a plot line in the Rodgers and Hammerstein musical Carousel. Did you ever see Carousel?
Yes.
It's one Absolutely. Of the great musicals. And he's a white guy, but he's a poor kind of trashy guy, right? From the wrong side of the tracks.
Yes.
And he's a carnival barker. And all of a sudden he falls in love with this girl. And she's pregnant, and it hits him that he has to make money. But he doesn't
That's
know
right.
how to make money. He has no
That's
skills.
Right.
He doesn't know what he's going to do. And in one of the greatest American musical theater moments of all time, in the soliloquy, he says, I'm going to steal, I'm going to kill, I'm going to take what I have to take in order to do what I have to do. And as I'm listening to you, I'm really hearing what you're saying.
Yeah. And you wind up where we are today.
Mm-hmm. And he does. He kills somebody, and then he dies, and then his family grows up, and she doesn't have a father. And that's the story of Carousel.
Yes. And that, in many ways, you know, I'm glad you used that example. In many ways, that is the framework and the story for many black and brown people in this country. Because yeah. when you combine the desire to simply have a healthy, normal life, but not being provided with the resources to achieve that, people are going to do what they got to do to make a way. And a lot of times that way winds up ending in violence, destruction, incarceration, drug use to numb the despair. And all of these things can be changed. We're in the process, slowly but surely.
We are changing.
Better education.
It takes time. Yeah.
It takes time, you know, but in the meantime, there's a lot of pain and suffering. You know, I should not
Let me
have...
ask you something. Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to ask you.
I should not have three family members in the last 27
years. No, it's unbelievable. Oh, my God.
Due to gun violence. It should not be.
No. Should not be. And let me ask you this, Anthony Campbell. What made you become a police officer?
I became a police officer in many ways because originally I was going to be a Jesuit priest. I have always had a love for God and felt like he was leading me into the ministry. And ultimately came to Yale University and met in Bible study the woman who's been my wife now for 22 years. And once I realized I wasn't going to be a Jesuit priest, my mother was a New York City corrections officer. My father sold drugs in the neighborhood. And he always told me, you are educated. You will be better than I am. I want a better path of life for you. And so when I graduated from Yale University in 1995, I saw a kiosk on the side of a bus that said, police others as you would have others police you. And that resonated with my heart. And I said, you know what? I bet you this is the way I could make a difference. And I'm glad I did go into policing, because what I watched in the community I grew up in Harlem was a lot of violence, a lot of death and destruction without any consequences. You know, black people losing their lives other than being incarcerated for low-level crimes. But when the serious crimes happened, there were no real consequences. And I wanted to be someone who made sure that, A, violence wasn't happening in black and brown communities, and B, that if it did happen, that we made sure we brought justice for that family and for the community. And I think I was able to do that by rising through the ranks in the New Haven Police Department, becoming the chief, acting chief in 2016, chief in 2017, and in 2017, delivering the lowest rate of homicides for the city of New Haven in 50 years. And the following year in 2018, the lowest level of shootings since we've been keeping records. It's not rocket science. We can do this. It takes a lot of work from a top-level leadership as a chief, being there for those families, pounding that pavement, being visible and making sure the officers follow up and do what needs to be done, and showing the community that you care and working together with the community to bring about justice. It can be done. So that's what kind of led me into law enforcement, and that's why I'm still here today at Yale University PD trying to bring about positive change.
Do you believe, Anthony Campbell, that in the broken windows theory of policing, that it's important to police lower level crimes for the greater good of the community feeling safe? What do you think about that?
I believe it as long as it's done well. I believe that people like Chief Nick Pastore, who's the chief in New Haven in the early 90s, did it the right way. I think that far too often the broken windows theory is used as a tool for continued systemic racism, you know, saying, well, we're just policing this to make sure that lower level things don't develop into higher level things. You know, stop and frisk has always been, you know, cloaked in the cover of, you know, broken windows theory. I think that when you address broken windows theory along the lines of making sure that a neighborhood is cleaned up, making sure that people, officers know the people in the community and are the most approachable people in that community. Because people in the community will tell you. They'll tell you who's dealing drugs. They'll tell you who's got issues with domestics. They'll tell you who lost their job and, you know, maybe on the radar for developing some issues. But you have to have a relationship with the community. And you don't need to do stop and frisk. You don't need to do motor vehicle stops, stopping people for minor infractions in order to search their vehicles. What you need to do is develop relationships. So it does work if it's done the right way and not used as a tool to further systemic racism.
I'm listening to you, and you're such a thoughtful, deep human being, and I'm just so impressed altogether with your approach to your job and your life. I'm thinking to myself, New Haven must have been terribly sad to lose you as a police chief. Why did you leave when you know that you were doing so much good in that city?
I left because, unfortunately, as many cities are experiencing and as many police officers can attest to, being with the city for 20 years, you know, when you come on, there's a contract, you have an expectation that after your 20 years, you'll be able to retire with not only a pension, but certain medical benefits, because you need those more as you get older than when you're younger. And the city was at a place where it was changing the medical benefits. And as a chief, I'm no longer part of the union, but the determination of what they give to the officers would affect me and my four assistant chiefs. So I went to the mayor, and the mayor said, I agree with you. You shouldn't be subject to that. You're not part of the union. You haven't been part of the union. And why should them changing the officers' medical benefits affect you? The mayor said she wanted to keep our medical benefits the same, myself and the four assistant chiefs. And we had to go before the Board of Alders. We went before the leadership of the Board of Alders. And because contract negotiations were happening with the officers, they said that they didn't feel that they could do it. They acknowledged that I'd done a fantastic job. And I told them that, well, you know, I'll have to depart to secure my medical benefits for myself and my family. And I believe my assistant chiefs are going to do that also. And you've got a good thing going here. I don't want to upset it. They said, well, you know, we respect you. Do what you got to do. If we need to call in the state police, if we need to call in the state police or others to police the city, that's what we'll do. And so I departed. And
you know, I have to tell you, I'm listening to this. You talk about the law of unintended consequences, why people say in this country it's insane that we tie our medical benefits to our jobs.
Yes.
If you ever needed a better example of how stupid it is that our medical benefits are tied to our employment, it's so ridiculous. I'm listening to your story and I'm understanding your motivation and everybody else is trying to row in the same direction. And in the end, they couldn't do it. They couldn't accomplish it to keep you. It's insane.
Yeah, I had to go. I had to think about my wife and my three boys, you know, two of which suffer with asthma. I had to think about, you know, the future. And I was like, I can't do that. I love the city.
My goodness.
I love the work I'm doing,
goodness.
But I have to think about the future for my health and for my family. So, it's sad. It's really sad.
Anthony Campbell, it's such a pleasure to talk to you and get to know you. I'm so glad you came on the show today. Thank you so much. Truly, my sincerest, I mean, condolences is such a, it's such a paltry word for the sympathy that I have for you and your whole family to lose a young brother who's only 32 years old, senseless, ridiculous act of stupid vengeance, just horrible. Shouldn't happen in a civilized society. Shouldn't have been allowed to happen. Shouldn't have.
Thank you so much, Lisa. I really appreciate it. And I just want to say thank you for the condolences to me and my family. And I just want to encourage you to keep doing the work that you're doing because it's making a difference and it matters. God bless you and your entire staff. Thank you again.
Thank you very much. Assistant Police Chief of Yale, former New Haven Police Chief Anthony Campbell on the Lisa Wexler Show. We'll be right back.